You're listening to Mortgage Lending Mastery. Get the knowledge you need to advance your mortgage practice quickly and efficiently from Jen Duplessis, America's Mortgage Mastery Mentor with over 37 years of experience and over $1 billion in lifetime fundings. Jen has been mentoring loan officers and realtors for over 15 years and speaking on stages across the globe. So settle in and get ready as Jen and her guests share their experience, passion, and strategies to help you crack the top producer code to reach new heights in your business. And now, here's your host, Jen Duplessis, Mortgage Mastery Mentor and Head Chick in Charge of Kinetic Spark Consulting.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Mortgage Lending Mastery. I'm your host, Jen Duplessis. Thank you so much for joining us today, for taking time out of your busy day to listen into this podcast. And we hope that today you are going to gain some great knowledge and it was all worth it. So without further ado, I want to introduce you to our guest today. David Licken is a 47-year veteran. You beat me. I'm telling you, it's not very often I find someone who's beat me. I'm at 40.
Oh, wow. Good.
Yeah.
So I just I had a birthday, so I crossed over to another. You know, we're at 48 now. It's 48.
Yeah, it's scary. I'm not saying 50. I'm telling you that right now. I won't be saying 50. He's a 47-year veteran in the mortgage industry. He's the founder, president, and chief transformational officer of Transformational Mortgage Solutions, or TMS. He and his team of industry veterans are transforming the way mortgage industry does business. And really what he does is he helps consult and coach and various C-suite companies, you know, to start their business, manage their business, exit their business, work on marketing, all kinds of pieces of that we're going to be talking about today. And he has a podcast called Licken on Lending, which I love. And I'm going to be on the show shortly. So you'll want to pop over to Licken on Lending. We'll have a link to that. And it's Licken on Lending. And he talks about leadership all the time. So welcome to the show. We're happy to have you, David. I'm so excited to have this opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Jen. It's an honor to be here. Kudos on the success of your podcast. You are nailing it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been a while, huh? 9 years. 9 years. We're barking on 9 years for this crazy podcast. But, you know, I love doing it. I love sharing stories. And things change. You know, thank goodness our market changes. Brian Buffini always says, principles don't change, but strategies and tactics do. And that's one of the things that we're talking about here today. And I really want to hone in on, and we can go in any direction, you know, that you want in a few minutes here, but I really want to hone in on what's going on with hiring and recruiting and things like that right now in the market, because as we're recording this, this is very timely. This is the time of year. A lot of people shift jobs in September, October, November. Some people are chasing rates. Some are looking for better culture. Some are just, it's a lull right now in business. Well, I say that here in Northern Virginia, because August is known as it's Paris in DC. Everybody goes to Paris and, they just go. And so there's nobody around in this time of year. So I want to talk a lot about this recruiting piece of things, even for those that are listening that are team leaders, right? Those that are regional managers and even our real estate agents, you know, about teams is, especially right now with the volume dropping, there are a lot of mortgage companies that are laying off people. And I think people think, well, that's great. It's like fish, you know, shooting fish in a barrel. But we have to remember that the first to go is the lowest person on the totem pole. So let's talk a little bit about that. But before we do, like mm-hmm. for you to share a story in your 47-year career of a time. We laughed in the green room about some speaking stuff, right? But a time in your career that you can remember, a client or a situation that can uplift us today because it was a funny story or it was somebody that you really helped.
Yeah, there's so many wonderful stories. There's the Movement More Mortgage story, which is just south of you down there. Casey Googled how to start a mortgage company. Believe it or not, that's how he started his company. And he found me. We helped him build that. But I think some of the funny stories of that, which has actually happened to me. And I think these are important for people to understand. I think the most important thing we understand is find out who we are, why we're doing it, and find out who we are. I have dyslexia, Jen. And so when I started in the mortgage firm, and as a banker, I struggled adding up a column of numbers and getting the same answer twice. It wasn't that I was dumb or anything like that, but I just, the numbers moved on the page. How can you add up a column of numbers if the numbers switch back and forth? So that finally the compliance department had a real issue with it. And they came out to, they talked to the president of the bank who had hired me to come out, and they said, we need to fire this guy. He just is, he's a train wreck. And they said, but he's our top producer. In fact, he is a top producer all over in three counties here. And it doesn't matter. He's a liability. You know, when compliance starts talking, it's always, they don't always come with it from the right perspective. So anyway, he came into the pressure, and he's really conflicted on this. We stopped at a friend of his. Now, his friend had a master's degree in business from the University of Washington. This is up in the Seattle area. And the president of the bank had a friend who he had the master's, but he loved autos. So he worked on an auto body business. So he says, hey, I'm really conflicted. Can I see you? I said, I'm going to let go of one of our top salespeople. And he says, why are you doing that? He says, he can't add up a column of numbers to get the same answer twice. He's driving compliance crazy. And the guy goes, how good is he? He says, well, he's like really, really good. He's our top producer. And he says, you're about ready to make your competitor's day. He says, I know, I'm feeling bad enough about this. What would you do? He says, let's see what the problem is. Again, he can't up column and numbers, but he's really good at sales. He goes, yeah, you are. And he said to the president of the bank, you're an idiot. You can't figure this one out. He says, hey, don't need to be insulted. I'm already feeling badly. He says, I would buy him a car. I'd get him three assistants and tell him he can never touch another column of numbers ever again.
Yeah.
Hire to your weaknesses. Operate to your strength. Yeah. And so it's one of those things. So he came out. I thought he was coming out to give me a prize or a bonus or something because I was doing so well. He told me later, I came out to fire you. But I talked on the way here. I stopped and came up with this epiphany that we need to surround you with people. So the bank changed their policy. They got a company car for me, and everyone else loved it because they got company cars. Couldn't do for one what they couldn't do for what they wouldn't do for others. Right. So the short story is, I think when we look at sometimes what is challenging us, and I think when I say that to those that are hiring, you say, this guy has this issue or this gal has that issue. I think you need to take a look, a deeper look. And yeah, but what is their superpower? What is the thing that they're really, really good at, Jen? And I love that's what you talk about a lot on your podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you there's just been so many times that, you know, I've been hired by mortgage, you know, loan officers and team leaders, and they just want to get rid of their whole team because they are all terrible. They're all, you know, and matter of fact, I just typed this in something that I was filling out something for. And I said, you know, so often, we are finger pointing and not thumb pointing, right? Mm-hmm. So we're pointing at other people. They're wrong. They're awful. You know, in your case, you know, he's stupid. He should be let go. He can't do this. Instead of thumb pointing at ourselves and saying, so what is, you know, again, their superpower, but maybe they're just in the wrong position. Mm-hmm. They could be in the right company, but maybe in the wrong position. They could be on the right team, but maybe in the wrong position, or someone has enabled them so they aren't growing. They're afraid to grow.
That's a big one.
And I think instead of really empowering.
Yeah, I think you hit on a really big one there. The number one is enabling. I think we see a lot of people afraid of losing the salespeople. I think the biggest fear mistake someone can have is afraid of losing their people.
Yeah.
We, as a result, in that environment, when you have that mindset, I'm afraid of losing, he may not be the biggest producer or he is the biggest producer. Either way, they're afraid of losing whatever loan officers they have. And I say that's creating a blind spot. First of all, giving you the wrong perspective, giving them the wrong perception about you. You're afraid of leaving them. And that what we fear, we often times bring on ourselves.
Right.
So I look at this from the standpoint of you need to be challenging people. Challenge the best person. Challenge obviously the weaker ones, but challenge the best ones, because when you are working for someone that is going to improve your game, Jen, again, the reason for the success of your podcast, you do this because you wanted to help lift people up. People are like elevators. They either take you up or take you down. It's something Marsha Davies said, who's at the MBA.
Yeah.
Love that in an interview. So I think what are you doing to lift people up and challenge them to achieve more? People will stay, even though they get offered more money, when the person that is taking the most care of them is, that's where they'll go to work. That's where they'll stay.
Well, and the same side of that, the flip side of that, because we know there's some statistics out there for millennials, they'll leave for less money because someone appreciates them and the culture, you know, or they're getting advancement personally. They have a personal, you know, goal. So I wanted to, let's talk about this for a minute. So, okay, before we dive into some of the tactical things, because I want to talk to you about some of the process and this, that, and the other, what I want to ask you about is what your take is right now with all the layoffs that are happening. And, you know, it's funny because my clients are now hiring, right? And I'm certainly guiding them on the precautions with this, but the good things. But what is your take on what's happening now? Is this the opportunity for people to bring some people on, use this downtime to do some quality training, use this downtime to do an extended interview process, use this downtime to do some lead indicator, you know, actionable items? What's your take on what we should be doing today?
Well, first of all, there is certainly a lot of operational people being let go. Not as many people are letting go of weaker loan officers or loan officers generally. Now, the weaker ones, because of cost, if you're occupying a chair and you're sucking air and cost out of the company, you should be let go at risk of that. I think it's what we measure is oftentimes what gets the tension on. And I think some people measure the wrong thing. They measure volume. I'll never forget, Jen, I was coaching and consulting to a company in Midtown, New York. And every time I go into a firm and I do a lot of consulting, we help a lot of brokers become bankers. We help bankers grow and get into more sophisticated positions in the market. And every time they walk me around and they love introducing me to their top loan officer. Every time I meet them, I put it back in the back of my mind, I draw a bullseye on that guy and I go, I doubt that person is the most profitable person in the company. I think we look at the high producers, we look at the wrong number. So as a hiring production manager, I always challenge everyone, says, how profitable are they going to be to your operation? I just hung up earlier on a call with the head of production for an East Coast based right there in the Virginia area that is a well-established company. I'd say their name, but I don't have their permission to do so. So I want to be somewhat cautious. Yeah. I'm sure you'd love that. But the problem is that they're looking at profitability. And that is the biggest single issue affecting the entire industry. We're going to see this quarter for the first time in a number of years, we're going to see that we're going to be in negative territory. We're going to be the mortgage industry is losing money. We're on a negative basis points, the net basis points profit.
Well, and we were hanging on by our fingernails on a ledge just from the squeezing of, you know, the cost per loan already.
Well, I think that the other thing is we were looking at this. The reason our in cost got so high is because the rate at which we had such an extraordinary expansion of our market, an extraordinary expansion. So we hired to that. And you touched on something earlier when I was talking that I want to touch on real poorly. I think we paid up big time. In the operational area, we were paying up to 150% more than we would normally pay for an underwriter.
Right.
When you look at that, now this is the time, Jen, for I'm telling everybody that owns a company, be looking at the cost of your operational people. There, you may have someone who's good but not great, but you're paying a lot because you brought them in this last cycle, and you're paying way too much. I mean, this is business. And I think anyone that goes for the big money and changes jobs, jumps around for the just to always get the more money, they're short-sighted, because when you get into this kind of market, that's what puts a bullseye at you, is you're the most expensive underwriter or the most expensive loan officer or whatever. This is a game where more and more people are looking at costs. What do we need to do to reduce costs?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, part of that is just, you know, the structure of how companies, you know, hire, is that it's all about the salary rather than the other parts of what is beneficial for that person. Is it upward growth? Is it the culture? Is it the community involvement? Is it, some other piece? Because it's sticky. People will stay with the company with less money just for some of that stickiness that they appreciate. You know, even just the simple appreciation, just saying that they appreciate someone in front of a group. Oh, that's good. And I hate to be so coy like that, but it's like, you know, if you just, you know, in public say, by the way, I just want to give a round of applause for Jen. You know, she went out of the way and did this, that, and the other. And it's like, whoo, they're good for another month and a half. Right.
Well, it's also interesting. Every study that has ever been done, do you know where compensation falls on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the most important, 10 being the least important? Do you think where does compensation that your focus is
I would say it's probably 7 or 8.
It is. That's really good. Well, that's because you understand this concept. Most people say, oh, no, that may be true for the other parts of it, other parts of the company. But it's even as much so, if not more so, for originators, because originators are not just interested in what they're making now. There's who is helping me grow? Who is challenging me to grow? Who is making me a better loan originator? Yeah. I could transfer over and get recruited away to another company, and that environment may be toxic. The type of people they have.
Yeah, the systems are bad. My reputation gets down the drain. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of things to consider. Yeah. And that's for those that are in the long haul. And I think, you know, just like anything in any industry, 80% of the people, right, are the, or 20% of the, you know, are causing this trouble. And this is where we all believe. And I'm glad we're talking about that, because this is part of that hiring process, is, you know, what to pay and how to pay. And we don't, of course, want to tell everybody there's 1,000 ways you can pay. You can pay flat fees, lower salaries, it doesn't matter. There's 1,000 ways that you can pay. What you need to do is find out what that trigger is for the person that you're hiring.
And when you look at triggers too, and they will throw out things, oftentimes it's money. Mm-hmm. But when you really start digging and get to know the person and you understand how they're wired, their history, what they've come through, oftentimes, like I'm thinking, the heroes in the world, as far as I'm concerned, are single moms, and they make wonderful, amazing loan officers. And the reason I'm so grateful to be in an industry where we can empower working moms, because single moms, is because what they can do is make so much money if they know how to manage their time. And they're usually pretty good at managing your time because they have so much. They're so organized. Yeah. So I think looking at that, when you listen, if I was recruiting someone, I found I'm recruiting a single mom, it may come up as money, but I'm going to say, I'm going to be here to make sure you have the time to support your family, be there for your kid and kids in a way that is more important to them. And I heard, took the time to hear what the bigger need is. It just won't always assume about that. There's one great story on that point, Jen, I will share with you one time. There was a guy who was recruiting. I'll make it real quick. Guy was recruiting the top person at another company. And that person had been there like 23 years. And that person, and was happened to be a top female that he was trying to recruit away from this guy. And these two people had worked together again for 23 years. He took the time to listen. And one time at a conference or at one of the events, he asked her, so what's the thing that's most frustrating to you? She says, oh, I live in a nice area, but I access my garage from the alley. And he says, it makes me nervous. And I don't have a garage door. He had just done a loan for a garage door opening company. He went and how much would it cost to put a garage door in with his company?
Than $1,000. Yeah.
Yeah. It was less than $1,000. And he delivered to her desk, a Tiffany box with a garage door opener in it. And he delivered it to her. She gave notice that day because the time to find out what is going on in her life, what was the most important thing to her, and nailed it, made her move. Because when we speak to people's hearts, Jen, when we speak to the heart, not just to the pocketbook, that's when we move and change lives.
Yeah. And I love that. I know a story. I have a colleague. His name is Jeff Hoffman. He's the founder of Priceline and all stuff. But he is actually my mentor, but he has a story like that too. And he talks about, you know, the five questions you should ask in an interview and the ones that really dig deep. And these are really, really important questions. But one of the questions, and I don't recall the question right now, I have it written down somewhere, but the question that he asked was about their goals. Because one of the things that we tend to do is, where do you see yourself in 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, which is, it's almost like, you know, how long do you plan to live in your house, right? Because why are you asking the question? Well, because someone else asked the question, so I think I'm supposed to ask the question. So instead of asking it like that, he goes, what are your personal goals? What are you trying to accomplish in your life and in your career? And one of the things that this person wanted to do is that his goal was to buy his mother a house. She had always rented, always been a renter, and he wanted to buy her a house and help her buy a house. And that was his goal. So every time Jeff saw him, he thought, how close am I helping him get there?
That's good.
And how often do we do that? I mean, we interviewed everybody. We ask a bunch of questions. We write it down. We know the answer at the moment, but we don't go back and listen and internalize it.
Another way to reframe that question that I've used over the years is this, what are your values? Mm-hmm. What do you value? There's some people that have a strong Judeo-Christian values, and being in an environment that's more frat house-ish may not fit. There's others that are more the frat house kind of people, and they go, we have this fun atmosphere. And I have clients in both spectrums, and they're both special. And I think it's taking the time to find out what people value. What is the thing that's most important? I mean, you mentioned millennials. Do you know the number one thing that's most interesting? Their ability to travel, being able to have time and money to travel and be able to have free time.
Yeah. And number two is community involvement, making an impact in the world. And I think that that's super important. And also, don't you agree that what's important now, you know, this is the first time in history that we have five generations in the workplace at the same time. It's so important for leaders to understand what the needs are of each one of those age demographics.
That's such a good point. It is such an important thing. We do the one apply. One is applicable for all, and that is just could not be further from the truth. So it's so important, especially as we bring the younger millennials in, Gen Z. They have a different set of values, and it's whether we understand them.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And that's funny that you mentioned that, because I had someone who said, well, I treat everybody the same. And I go, oh, well, there's your problem. There's your problem. You can't treat everybody the same. Yeah, everybody's different. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about let's go with what not to do, or what pitfalls should you be looking for as you're hiring people that have been laid off someplace else, and, you know, and they may come in and they may or may not be naysayers and, you know, bad dog their company or whatever, but what are some of the signs that people could be looking for if they're looking to hire a new loan officer assistant? There's a lot of people who are doing that, saying, look, processes got laid off. Maybe they want to go into that side of things. Now, of course, they came from high income to now low income and benefits, right? So what are some red flags we should be looking for right now that you're seeing and consulting people on?
Well, I think the number one thing is people's attitudes. And so one of the things I always like to hear, what did someone learn from their last experience, whether it was a successful experience or wasn't a successful experience?
Instead of tell me about a bad experience you had.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I know some people that hire, they say, boy, it sounds like you were just in a horrible environment. They try to invite the person into a bit of a complaining session, and if they bite on that, because they know every company has those people that'll run around and ask you the questions, bait you for a negative answer.
Yeah.
This particular person that I watched do that in one of his hiring interviews, and it was brilliant. And he says, I'm not wanting to get them to negative, but I want to find out how their car steals. We all take our hands off the wheel. If we have our car properly aligned, it should veer slightly into the right. Mm-hmm. Side of the, go to the next lane to the right. Again, a theory, assuming that there's a ditch there, not another.
Right.
But the concept is, how does their vehicle steer when their hands are not? In other words, when they're in a natural, relaxed state, do they tend to a negative, or they go, it was a negative, there was a bad environment, that's why I'm here sitting with you, I did not like this particular thing, and I'm it is what it is, and they make an allowance for why that company exists and why that is. But they didn't buy in on the negativity. So for number one is, I think the biggest thing that we all have to watch out for, and as we bring in new people, is there any amount of toxicity, any bad attitudes? Yeah. Because it's like a cancer, Jen. You know this. You have a great attitude. You talk about this in your podcast. And I think it's so important that we bring in people that foster and grow our cultures and what our mission and values are. And is there good alignment? I would rather hire someone who's not as good as a producer, but has a good alignment than someone who is a top producer
with a bad attitude.
Yeah. I just don't need it.
I totally agree. You can't train people on customer experience. You can't train people, you know, on being helpful, those types of things, but you can train them the mechanics. And of course, in this industry, of course you can, because none of us went to school to be a mortgage person.
No, very few, if any. I met a couple. Bill Cosgrove said he actually went into this business to become a loan officer. He met with
someone. But you know, they didn't go to school. There's not a class. There's no class in school.
Thank God for what the MBA is doing, trying to educate as many of us and provide great programs. But there's not a university out there that has a
not at all. So, you know, this begs the question about you know, hiring and disc profiles and things like that. You happen to mention about what happens when your hand's off the steering wheel. So, you know, that's adaptive and natural styles and disc profiling. How much of a role do you think that plays? I know every company does it, even though they're not supposed to before hiring. Every company does it, and they get it and they file it.
So the question is it good right. or is this not good? Right. Well, here's the reality. There's this thing called attunement that we learn. It's the first skill that we as humans pick up on. A baby reads its mother, or whoever its caregiver is, that's right there, and is learning. Is she on or she and paying attention to me or not?
Right.
So we are all profiling everybody, whether it be the grocery clerk, the you know, the waitress or waiter at the restaurant, the flight attendant. We all profile them. I want to know that they're all very, very, very analytical and calm. That's what I want in a pilot. Yeah. I'm becoming a pilot. My wife thinks it's not such a good idea because I'm more of an A personality, emotive.
If you like checklists, you're gonna love it.
I love checklists. I do believe they're so valuable. But the point of it is this. I think we need to make sure that we are getting insights into people. Most people can figure out someone's personality if they work on it, whether it's done through a scientific means. I happen to like the Berkman assessment. And I'll tell you why. All of them are good. Myers-Briggs, they're all excellent, excellent. But the Berkman measures where you go under stress. For the longest time, Jen, I have a sanguine, outgoing, bubbly personality that's going strong. Until the last, that crunch time every month where we are, got to get a lot done. And then stress shows up and I go choleric. I go to a choleric command control army general. And you go like, look, and what happened to the friendly fun guy? This a-hole that's showing up right now isn't so much fun. Well, it's because I'm in stress. I think it's important that we know not only what our usual behavior is, but we also measure where our stress levels, and it'll take some surprises out of the hiring process. Oh, you're that kind of person under stress. I think that's a valuable insight.
Yeah. Oh, and I know who I am under stress. That's for sure. That is for sure. I become very German. That's all I'm going to say. Very German. Do this, do that, do this, do that. You did that's it wrong. Cleric. Let's look at it.
That's a classic cleric personality. Germans.
Yeah. Because I just want to dive in and get it done. No messing around. We're going to get it done. Right. Yeah. And so that was,
I believe in a certain degree, profiles are good. Profiling is bad. It's meditation.
Right.
But profiling, beginning understanding of someone, how someone's wired helps you manage them. Now, I have one client that measures the top dozen or so people in their company. It's a large company, and they interview the bottom line. They said, it's not scientific. For whatever reason, this type of person does better at our company.
Yeah.
Now, that is hiring and using this tool intelligently. It's a behavioral science approach. And so they go, we don't know. This person may work better somewhere else.
Yeah.
So before they even start the interview, they do go through a disc profile, and that they will only interview those that are closer to that, which happens to be a personality profile that matches what they're experiencing as success at their company for whatever reason.
Well, and this is what I was talking about earlier about sometimes people are just in the wrong position. Sometimes you put, you know, a dominating go-getter, you know, type of person into a position that, you know, of being your receptionist.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. It doesn't work. That doesn't work. Don't sit there.
Nope.
How come you left this here? Yeah. You have to be really careful of that. I think that's important. Okay. So what are some other flags? So one is toxicity. What is another flag that we should be looking at? Or a question that people could be asking him, okay, you got let go. Why did you get low? Why?
why did you?
I just invert that. That is hilarious.
That's a dyslexic. I do that all the time.
It's funny. My daughter-in-law, she has a master's degree in this, and now I can't think of the name of what it's called, but it's funny how you can reverse words so fast. Mm-hmm. And then you know, so how did you get let go?
Yes.
It's probably not the best word thing to ask, but
another thing what you can do is say, tell me what you learned at this last experience. You can ask, was it a successful experience or unsuccessful? Mm-hmm. And you can find questions. When you ask questions that show concern as to what happened there without judgment, here's the way. However you ask the question, make sure there's not judgment in that question. That's the most important thing. And the other thing that I'm looking for, the other than toxicity, that's an easy one, is work ethic. Mm-hmm. You know how infectious it is, Jen, when you come around someone who has an amazing work ethic, it lifts like a tide.
Yeah.
Everybody in the whole company, they go, that person may not be the top producer, but they outwork everybody. And even the ones that are doing well, it helps. So I don't want lazy people. I don't want people that don't have a sense for process. I look at all those things that contribute to a good work ethic. There's a lot of spinning of cycles. So I like to understand about someone's process. Mm-hmm. When you take a loan application, when you are out originating, or when you're out calling, doing sales, what is a process that works better for you and why? That's another great question.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one. And so that brings me to another question. In fact, I had process written down here. Okay. So that's good. I just crossed it out. I don't have to ask that question now. That's a question, a good question. About the work ethic and the process too. How often do you think a team leader, manager, regional, you can scale it if you want, but how often do you feel that they should be meeting with their team members?
Oh, I think it was Sam Walton that says management by wandering around. J.C. Penney had that same thing. Mm-hmm. I think there should be always a sense that I'm in touch with and in tune with. It comes to attunement. So there has to be some level of that going on constantly. Mm-hmm. Now, the actual formal meetings, I believe that if you're coaching people, and so I have three levels. Let me give you the three levels. There's rip, pip, and pop. Are you ready for this?
Okay, rip, pip, and pop, because I have some acronyms for mine too. This is so funny.
Yeah, so rip is rest in peace. You're doing so well. We're not going to coach you. If you want a meeting, call me and we'll have a meeting. Yeah. It's the person that is truly at the upper rarefied air. Leave them alone. Yeah. Pip is
be there.
Make sure you pay attention to them so they don't get recruited away, because they're getting a lot of phone calls. Yeah. But make sure you're plugging into them, encourage them. What is their love language? That's another thing we look at, is love languages. Yeah. And find out what is the thing. Is that giving a gift? Is it words of affirmation, words of appreciation? Yeah. I mean, for me, like I'm words of affirmation and give me a hug. It's like that floats my boat. Yeah. Giving a gift, like I forget to get, terrible like that. We have lots of room. Thank God for reminders for gift giving. But here's, and it's make sure you pay attention to the most important one is where the vast majority of our loan originators sit, is in the personal improvement, PIP, personal improvement plan. Yep. Everybody should be on that. I know some people that are in the rest of peace and get upset if they're not included in the PIP plan. Because I want to be getting good, because the best want to improve.
Always.
Improvement, man. And that's where the vast majority of your people will sit. Probably as much as 70 to 80% of your people sit in a personal improvement plan. Now, if you are not succeeding in that, you roll into the last one. That's the pop. Produce or perish.
Yeah.
Produce or perish.
That you're saying produce, because I always say poop or get off the pot. I'll just say the way I said it. I know that's where you were at.
Yeah. We don't have grandkids yet. Where our kids are old. That's why I've
got. Oh, yeah. My grandkids. Oh, yeah.
You got grandkids. We can't wait for that day. We started our family late. So we're waiting for grandkids. Can't wait for that day.
I love it. Produce or perish. I love it. Yeah. And you're right. So I did something all the time. Every month, I did something called a plan and review.
That's good.
Plan and review.
Every month. See, that's a good formula.
We're just going to meet. We're just going to, hey, how are things going? Are you on track? Are we on track? Are we supporting you? Do you need any help? Do you need any suggestions? You know, I noticed a trend here. How are things going? You know, all of that. And then we would move, if we into your pop, we moved into CNCs, which are coaching and counseling.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. What's great about it is that if you have regular PIPs, like you're suggesting, if you have regular PIPs, then they will expect the pop.
Yeah.
If it's going in a negative direction. It's easier for you to administer as a leader, because now you're going, well, why are they calling me? Hey, I need to talk to you tomorrow. We haven't talked to me in like a year.
No, that's not a good thing.
Bad leadership.
Bad leadership. And there's a lot of that out there. They run and hide. And I think that another thing that I would encourage is an organization, have your company be a coaching company. What do I mean by that? Mm-hmm. It's like where the top producers are coaching the ones that are struggling.
Yeah, mentorship.
Like It's like a big family. You know what I mean? They, when they used to have 12 kids, it's the older kids were changing the younger kids' diapers. It's we're all in this together. And when you create a mentoring program within a company, that can make such a difference. And you're awesome. And the other thing is, there may be someone that's down in a PIP program that's working in some areas, but they have some wonderful traits. Let's talk about that one with a work ethic that is in this performing as well. I will take that one and have that person do training on what their work ethic, their systems, their processes. So I think there's a lot of ways which we can, and the nice part about that, maybe that comes from the
I mean, it's super critical.
It evens out the workload. It takes the workload off of the production manager.
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest, you know, pitfalls that a lot of producing managers have is that they don't have time to produce. So why call yourself a producing manager? Really, it's just a babysitting job. And so it does take some pressure off, but it does elevate the whole team because you're highlighting and spotlighting those that, you know, have great things. I'll tell you, I mean, I'll be honest with you. There was a company, I'll keep it unnamed, that I was at for many years. And in fact, I was in the top 200 loan officers at the time that I was with this company. And I was recruited out of that company because I was a top producer woman. And every sales meeting, they only had men stand up and give their sales ideas. And these were men that weren't in the top 200 loan officers.
No, I think when it comes to
this, and I said goodbye.
Yeah, I just did an interview with someone else who is a top sales coach like yourself, and they quoted a lawsuit that's going on right now because there wasn't enough diversity where they got nailed for redlining because they looked at the pale, male, and stale old loan officers that were at the company, and they said, "Where's the diversity? We have you serve in markets where there is a strong minority presence of another ethnic group. Where are those people in your organization?" And I think we need to be more and more aware in this ever-growing, more sensitive, politically correct world that we need to be looking when we're hiring to make sure we have some good diversity in there.
Yeah.
Diversity can get taken
too
far.
But then use it too. It's not about just hiring it, but utilizing the skill set within it as well. And I think that's, you know, critical. Critical for hiring. Okay. So we've kind of addressed some of those red flags, but just, you know, what to be looking for, what questions we should be asking. Cause this is for everyone who's in here, you know, and knowing, because one of the things we talked about in the green room also is what are companies looking for right now?
Yeah.
Because there may be people that are listening who have been laid off and said, well, I've got to find a way to keep myself fresh. So I'm going to listen to Jen's podcast to keep myself fresh for a while. Right. Yeah. And that's a really good thing. Even if you're not in sales, you know, cause we talk about everything. What are some of the things that you're finding are trends in the higher, you know, C-suite level that they're looking for? Are they lean? Are they trying to go lean and mean? Are they saying, you know what, we don't even want to be lean. If something comes to us, then we'll assess it and then look at it. What's happening?
Well, there's the obvious thing that's going on where everyone's trying to grow their production people, and there's sign-on bonuses that are still being paid. Those are
$150,000 signing bonus that I heard the other day.
I just saw another over $1 million paid out to someone. Well, what the loan officer doesn't realize is pay whatever sign-on bonus they're paying for it. It's baked into their pricing.
Uh-huh.
And that's the part is you go like you're financing your own sign-on bonus and you wonder why your price is going to suck when you get your new rate sheet at this new place.
Right.
You got $1 million in the bank. And I think there's a lot of short-sightedness.
Yeah.
So that's one of the trends we're seeing. But there is a lot of attention going on. If you look at who is getting paid what in companies, I'm telling you a conversation that is really starting to simmer up from the sea level. It's coming down from above is we're paying loan officers too how much? And you go like, but salespeople, if I don't pay them, they're going to get stolen away. That comes back to a fear-based management style. Right. I think the overall trend is we are going to see loan officers be able to produce more because of technology that's coming in. So if I'm a loan officer and I'm wanting to make sure that my value stays where I stay gainfully employed and continue to be making the maximum money, I'm going to be looking at what technology can I utilize to enable me to do more business, empower me to do more business. That is going to make you more valuable. Yes, take the big bucks as long as they're there. Yeah.
They're extending the payback period too. I mean, a 3-year payback, you know, or a 3-year Not non-compete. Yeah. What's the word? I'm having a hard
time. There's a lot of non-competes. If you could take
There's that there too. But I'm saying, here's your 150 grand, but if you leave before 3 years,
you have to pay it back. It's a recapture.
Recapture. What, yeah. You're recapture.
Yeah. So you're all locked into staying there and especially when you paid off the things you bought in the last cycle and you don't have the money in the bank. I tell you, I take people say, we just got a big sign-up bonus. I said, what did you do with it? Well, I paid off my house, or I paid off my,
my watch,
Lamborghini, and they paid that off. I go, not a good choice. I would have left that money in the bank, because what if you want to be, you find out the toxicity of this environment that you just moved into is not worth. How many people get married and going, oh my gosh, what I got dated and what I married. And there, I mean, I don't believe in divorce. I believe marriage should be thought through. And I think it's a lifetime commitment. However, there are times where divorce is absolutely appropriate. And there's a way you want to get out of some relationships. Take the money, stick it in the bank. You don't have to pay taxes on it, but stick it in the bank.
Right. So. And that's about it. You know, it's almost like we need, it's something, there's something about, I've got a colleague, she's a doctor, but she also happens to be a financial planner. So she is, maybe she's a psychological doctor, philosophical or whatever, but she does financial cures about keeping you healthy and wealthy, right? Keeping your wealth healthy. And we were talking about, financial literacy versus financial, application, right? The application of it. So many people are so financially illiterate, even those that are in the mortgage space. And I know this because I'm coaching all the time, but I was coaching a couple of weeks ago and I introduced everybody to blended rate because we're starting to see more HELOCs come in. And I go, do you know what blended rate is? People are like, don't know, because they've been around for 20 years, but we haven't done that for that long. Yeah. And so I had to teach blended rate. Do you know what effective rate is now that rates are higher and, the standardized deduction could be higher. And so now we want to pop into some itemized deductions. Do you know how to do effective rate? No, don't know how to do that. Right. And so it's one thing to know, but it's another thing to know how to apply it.
You're bringing up a really, really good point. We have a whole crop of new people that have made a lot of money in these really robust, good times. Yeah. If you couldn't make money in this business, you were, I don't want to be too insulting, but the point of it is that we've had the best of times. Those skills, loan products, adjustable rate mortgages, and looking at how you can do all the various buy-ups, buy-downs. These are skills that we need to get back. So I would say, if a hiring manager or a company is listening to this, man, make sure you're getting classes on it. And if you're a loan officer going, I don't know what they're talking about, then ask.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great podcasts out there that do a lot of teaching, and you do a lot. You provide a lot of that information, Jen. So kudos to you for helping them.
Thanks. Yeah. I actually provide more of it in my Facebook group because it's easier to administer, but because this is about you, not about me. So I love it. All right. So, as we kind of finish up our time today, what advice do you want to leave us with? What are some things that you'd like to share that are in your wheelhouse of, hey, this is my expertise, so I am going to tell everybody about my expertise real quickly here.
Well, I think it's something you and I have in common, years of the business and all that. I think that is one of the most common denominators of anyone who's been in the business. This industry is changing, Jen, as you know. And the most important thing is, what are you doing to educate yourself?
Yeah.
Now, I'm an auditory learner, so I learn by listening. That's why podcasts are so important to me. Mm-hmm. What's interesting, more and more salespeople are auditory learners. My wife is a book reader. She'll print things off of the computer screen to read it, and it drives me crazy. All the toner we're going through.
I did today. I printed a contract. I can't read it on the thing. I got to print it, touch it.
Well, I don't read it. I take my Mac computer and I paint over it and hit let it talk to me. It reads it to me.
No, I gotta touch it. Yeah. Some things, not all things.
The point of it is, however you're learning, take the time to be constantly learning and go back and listen. I started another podcast called Licking on Leadership. And what I'm doing on that podcast is I'm going through and finding the old guys. I'm 72. I'm saying an old guy. They go, people, look at, don't you know you're old? And I go, I don't think so. I don't feel that. But anyway, I go find people that have been in the business, for almost 49 years. So it's looking at five people that have been in it for a long time that have all this history. Yeah. Bring back these products. What were the products that are, do we know, you know, people, they know where we had a 125 mortgage, 125% LTV mortgage.
I know. Well, I was telling people about a gem and a gypum.
A gem and a gypum,
right? And we were talking about, you know, builder subsidies. And I said, you know, that's where I'd go today. And so now they're popping back up again as, you know, seller subsidies. But most people don't understand what a 3-2-1 and 2-2-1 and 1-1 buy down is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. I think the most important thing, prepayment penalties. I mean, there's so many things that you can learn from. History repeats itself.
Yeah.
Certainly in this business, it's a cyclical business. Go back and learn and keep yourself up to date on the new things, the technology advances and what you have as advantage. Don't lose the sense of history of the programs that are there. That's what I would say. And the number one common denominator of someone's continually being successful, they're always learning and reinventing themselves.
Always be learning. And I know you, so let me ask you this, you know, because you're a learner, and I was going to say for myself too, you know, I have three coaches, I have a mentor, I'm in four masterminds. I'm constantly learning too, keeping myself relevant. I have a mortgage company so that I can stay relevant with my clients. I don't do anything in it anymore, but I have a mortgage company so that I can stay relevant with everyone. And that's intentional. And is that hard work? Yes. And do I have to file forms and stuff? Sure. But I love doing it because it keeps me top of mind of what's happening in the marketplace. I can talk circles around mortgage-backed securities and what's going on with inflation and all that. Make sure you do that. But I imagine you have the same type of community you surround yourself with.
Yeah, I surround myself with some of the best coaches. I'm listening to coaches. I mean, Alan Mulally right now, there's a book called The American Icon. It's about Alan Mulally. He was at Boeing. It's a must read for anybody out there in the marketplace. Do you know what his hourly rate is, Jen?
What?
I know what I charge on my hourly rate.
Yeah.
I like pricing myself up there as one of the most expensive. Do you ever ask a heart surgeon how much you charge? No, you go, how many have you done and how good are you? So I don't mind being known as the most expensive consultant. I've heard what he charges. He charges $200,000 an hour.
Wow. Yeah. And what's it called? The American what?
The American Icon. It's a story.
I'll put the link in. That's why I'm writing. Yeah.
It is Alan Mulally. It's written by Bryce Hoffman. It's a great book. And it really talks about, here's the thing that I like about that. And while I think it's a relevant book for this day and age, it talks about when Alan Mulally was recruited away from Boeing, which he turned around, did a masterful job of, and they brought him into Ford and just ahead of, to turn it around, they were losing money. And all that he went through, but they went through the financial crisis and all the things that he had. They came out. They're the only automaker that didn't take a bailout from the federal government.
Yeah.
And it's the principles that are in that book. We're going through some tough times in our industry. There's no question about it. We got more regulation. We got more people looking over our shoulders. It's more of a challenging environment. So I love finding inspiring books.
Yeah.
And that are around. So I draw that. I also draw from conversations. I listen to your podcast because I want to know what's going on. You represent your tribe, your people, that really, really well. And as a guy who consults to the owners and CEOs of companies, now you're a business owner as well, which I applaud you for because you have someone else running it all. You stay in your sweet spot and what you love and your passion. Yeah. That's just outstanding. But I think the most important thing is that people continue to surround themselves and learn. It's the number one trait that I keep coming back to. So I listen to, I'm a part of three masterminds. And I also run masterminds. If there's not one that I like, I go start them.
I know.
And I think it's so important. You go like, well, I'd like to get to know people. Well, start a podcast. I started my podcast 14 years ago and I was scared out of my mind. What am I going to talk about? And someone said, well, why don't you interview people? When I got into the interviewing like you do, and you find out you had developed this whole community of people that are eager to share your ideas. So start a podcast. Start a mastermind if you can't find one that meets with.
Yeah, well, and that's what I did, you know, when I was a loan officer, we had a mastermind. We met every single month. You know, I had a group of advisors and, you know, different people from different businesses that came in. It was like a mini BNI, except it wasn't referral tossing. It was helping. And, you know, and
we're going to pick this up. So this is a teaser. This is a segue into my podcast. When I'm going to be interviewing you next week for my podcast. We're going to talk on this because because what you do, the mastermind, how you are setting yourself up with coaches, I think that's what we're going to pick up this interview on. We're just going to continue down, but we're going to move it over to my podcast because I think this is what you do brilliantly, Jen. And I want people to understand, how is it done? With whom is it done? What is the schedule in which it's done? Who runs the agenda? Is all the practical process part of it? So,
there is. And you know, it's such a loose word that's used now is, I have a mastermind, but I am a certified mastermind leader.
Wow. Good.
And we follow a specific guideline and plan that was, you know, established by the National Mastermind Association. And I think that, you know, and again, this is an example of learning. Mm-hmm. It's not just, I think I'll throw together a mastermind. It was, well, what is entailed? What should I be doing? Are there certifications? Let me go get one, and that's really all about learning again. That's the same thing. That is so important. So I'm ready to
flip the microphone and start interviewing you.
Right. We'll just pause this and then start it again.
Right into that one. You had one more question.
Yeah. So if you were walking into a company now, because there's a lot of shifting going in the higher echelon as well, I'm noticing. Yeah. If you were walking into a new company, and let's say you're walking in as a regional manager, as a, you know, probably not a branch, maybe a branch manager too, but a regional manager for a sales team for a couple of branches and stuff, what would be some of the things that you would say to do and not do in this environment? Because everyone feels beaten up, right? Everyone's saying, we need more numbers. You got to go get out there and get to the street. How would you position yourself?
This is one of my favorite topics because it's basically, how do you interview your future boss? Mm-hmm. And I think it's really asking the right questions. The first thing I know is you want to make sure you're aligning your mission, vision, and values is aligned with theirs. So I go right into that. I always flip the interview right around. And that's years ago. I've owned companies now for decades and decades. But when I was interviewing, I always flip it around. I say, well, that's great. I'll answer that question, but tell me about this. And it got to the point where I found myself interviewing them, and I would really make sure there's good alignment for me because it's
my life.
And if you come home as a spouse or a dad, and you're coming home and you're not in the right environment, you want to kick the cat, the dog, and
yell at everybody.
Grump and yell at everybody. Who wants that kind of dad to come home?
Yeah.
Or that kind of wife to come home, or spouse? You want to be able to find out that you're lining up. I always look at it this. I want to make sure that there's good alignment so that I'm operating in my strength, they're operating in their strength. We sure they complement each other. So when I come home, if I have had a great, great day, and there's Six Working Geniuses by Patrick Lencioni, Google that. We'll put the link. I'll provide that link. Find out to make sure you're working in the two top working geniuses. There's two working geniuses, two working competencies, and two working frustrations. Don't be working in your working frustration. If they require you to work in your working frustration, you're going to come home and be a miserable person to live with. If you're working and they want you to work in your working genius, you're going to do so well. And you'll come home every day. This is the best day, best job ever, because I'm getting to do what I'm designed and wired and created to do.
So let's take that one step further. So we're going to extend this a little bit here. Sorry, but we will close up here in a second, but I want to extend that a little further. Now you have your position. How do you position yourself with the team?
That's really good. Then I come in as I listen. The most important part, if you are responsible for a team, don't talk, don't tell, listen. It should be asking the right questions. The art of asking, Jen, the right questions is the most misunderstood, underrated part of being a good leader. You must ask the right question rather than put out what you believe. It's so easy, especially new leaders. They go, I need to establish my leadership. I need to come out there and tell everybody what I am about and all that. No, find out what they're about. Find out everything about them. And in so doing, you can find a way to I love that value. I share that value. But find out about the people that you're leading. Take the time to learn. Again, we're talking about learning, common denominator, learning about the people that you're coming in.
Yeah, it's almost interviewing them all over again, but in a different, I mean, it's definitely a different facet, but you know, what do they like about this job? What do they not like about this job? What would they change? Why have they stayed? You know, what are they hoping is going to happen? What could they, you know, what do they wish someone would listen to them about, you know, if they had an idea? I mean, I think that that's, you know, really critical. I love it. Well, I know we could talk forever.
It could. I got a feeling you might be.
Because we are old mortgage people.
So we don't we look good though? Don't we still look good?
Yeah, oh, we look great. I love it. I love it. It's been good to us. There's no question about
love
it. I love you. It's not even a bucket. It's like a trunk full of knowledge, you know, and little nuggets that you can, you know, you look in, you open this big old trunk, you just open this trunk up and you're like, oh, look at all this treasure. Look at this. Look at that. Look at these great things. There's so many pieces in there that you're sharing, and it's just been a pleasure to interview you today.
It's been a joy. I can't wait to have you on my podcast here next week, and we'll share that one out. I think it's most important. The reason I'm number one most excited and encourage people in this industry is it's one of the most transformative things you can do for people's lives by getting them into a home and getting it into a home successfully. That's why I love this business, Jen. I love what you're doing to foster that. Thank you for your contribution to this industry being one of the best industries you can work for. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. So everyone, thank you so much for listening in. Take a quick second to just use that thumb to scroll down to the bottom and give us a great 5-star rating and write us a great review. Something wonderful about David, what you heard here, what you learned in this podcast, we hope that you have done that. And if we went too fast for you and he was laying down too many great treasure gifts and nuggets, then go back and listen to it at half speed. Have fun with it. But I thank you so much for listening in. And we look forward to talking to you next time on Mortgage Lending Mastery. Go make it a great day. Bye, David.
Thank you, Jen. Appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to Mortgage Lending Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to hear more sales tips, ideas, strategies, and tactics to help you with your personal and professional growth to multiply your results in record time. And if you like what we're doing, don't forget to give us a rating and review so we can continue to bring you the best content possible. Wanting more beyond the podcast? Join our Mortgage Lending Mastery membership community, where you will find extended interviews with our favorite guests, weekly training, tips, and insider secrets, fireside chats with Jen, free content, meet, share, and collaborate with other members, and so much more. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about this exclusive content. Mortgage Lending Mastery is an Industry Syndicate charter podcast. Industry Syndicate is the first podcast network specifically for the mortgage and real estate industries. Get the Industry Syndicate app in the App Store or Google Play today.